Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
You guys can't hear it, that's fine.
Yeah, I can't hear it.
Yeah, I can hear it.
I can hear Joe joining.
Hi.
Showtime. Hi.
What happened? What'd I do?
You hear the hum of Joe's voice.
Yeah.
Very nice. That means it's working.
Shit, where's my water? Un momento.
I have Pernell's a Japanese sports drink instead of water.
Japanese sports drink?
Yeah, it's extremely popular there. It's called Pocari Sweat.
Huh. Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's a terrible name.
Gonna say it doesn't just sound very appetizing.
It's just like it looks like cloudy water. Like it has no color in it. It's just transparent and kind of cloudy. And it tastes like it's vaguely fruity. But you know, it's like it was supposed to be like this this thing for dehydration. Just like a really souped up version of like a kind of Gatorade, but without like it. It was meant for, like, medical purposes at the beginning, and so, but then people liked the taste of it, so it became a very popular, it says on it, hydration drink.
Wow. Is
what it says on the package, yeah. And if you look at it, it has the plainest, most ordinary logo in the world. Let me just pull up some of it. Right. Anyway, Catherine buys it by, like, the box load, and so I drink it sometimes. I've developed a taste for it. Yeah, it's cool. Actually from the Otsuka Pharmaceutical Company is...
Whoa. Do you like it?
Yeah.
That you developed a taste for it.
Yeah. See, there it is.
For now, we're just talking about soda like we do every week somehow. I really love that it's always organic, too. Like, it never feels plant. People are like, here's a weird soda I'm drinking today. We're all like, oh, shit, cool.
But yeah, it's not even carbonated.
Oh, shit. Why did I think it was?
Because not it's a carbonated. Drink. Call it a soda.
Huh?
Didn't hear any of that, Pernell.
I was saying, if it's not carbonated, how can we call it a soda?
You can't. I messed up, buddy. I really fucked up this time.
It's like a TV show.
This time, guys. I fucked up so bad this time.
Like, Brooke really fucked up this time. How will she get out of this mess? Find out next time.
I want that whole thing as a soundbite. Like, when I do anything, just, like, hammer that out. That's awesome.
How will she get out of this pickle?
What the fuck?
Sounds like Chris has got himself in quite a jam. I actually miss those old like little scenarios, like the TV show would end, like they'd be in a situation that's really rough, and then they would just freeze frame, and the narrator would go, "What are they going to do to get out of this one? Find out." You're like, "I can't wait to find out how they decide to turn this firelight on or whatever."
Next Saturday, this is bullshit.
I feel like even I'm too young for those kind of shows. That's like Dukes of Hazzard type stuff, right?
Yes, those Duke boys.
Cartoons did it too, though. Like, how will Goku manage to afford gas for his next voyage? Find out next week. Like they are all those old cartoons.
Dragon Ball Z.
I remember that episode where Goku starts an OnlyFans.
He starts like three episodes pulling out his credit card from his wallet.
Oh no!
It's really intense.
Chi-Chi's this close to discovering Goku right in the act. That's looking bad for Goku. And what about Piccolo? He's trying to get a subscription to his account, but he doesn't want anyone to know that it's him.
Dude, fucking Piccolo has an OnlyFans. What are you...
Hey, just because he has an OnlyFans doesn't mean he doesn't want to sign up for
He's supporting other creators.
Yeah.
I love that we were already arguing about this fan fiction we're writing on the fly.
That's so good. Oh my god. Like,
top 10 Dragon Ball Z characters with OnlyFans. Bulma, 100%. Like, Vegeta, not before he met Bulma, but definitely after.
Well, you know, Bulma in this world would have an OnlyFans, and it would be priced exorbitantly.
Yeah. Or maybe Vegeta did beforehand and then stopped because he settled down, but didn't realize that Bulma kept going.
I could see that happening, actually.
There you go.
Oh, my God. Like, those, like, I actually was looking at some old Dragon Ball episode clips not too long ago, just because I was getting nostalgic for the show, because I watched it when I was a child, like when it used to air on like Philly 57, but I remember so little of it except for when Goku turned into the Great Ape while they were in prison. That's the only thing I really remember.
Because I rewatched it with my son a few years ago.
How does it hold up?
It's great. It's fucking awesome. We watched the Kai version, Dragon Ball Z Kai, which cuts out a lot of the bullshit. Which some of the bullshit is very fun, but like, you know, who has the time for that these days? I mean, I think it's better to start from the, you know, the watching the show where you're not going to, you know, get lost in the sauce for 20 episodes and just get to the point and enjoy the, you know, the good stuff. And then if you want
to, it sounds like, right? You said you watched Z.
Yes. Yeah. We watched Z. I have still never watched like any of GT, and I watched a good amount of original Dragon Ball.
Do you remember much of it though?
Original Dragon Ball?
The original Dragon Ball.
It was real weird.
It was definitely a weird show. Yeah. I liked it. I remember very much enjoying it and being surprised that a show like that was on TV. But,
I feel like when I hear people talk about it, I feel like I didn't watch enough of it, because they'll reference things and I'm like, that sounds like a lot, and I don't remember that part at all. So I don't know what happened.
Well, you got to figure, like, back in those days, like, I don't think they even aired the episodes particularly in sequence, or maybe they aired small parts of certain sagas. Like, I don't remember him dealing with any of the Native American people that I saw clips of recently, but I do remember him somehow climbing the tower to meet Korin. So it's like, it's weird stuff like that where I'm like, I remember that, but I don't remember him doing that. I remember Jackie Chun, who was in the tournament, and I even remember the guy who had the freaking long hair he could fight with somehow. But, you know, basically before they had crazy alien powers, it was just normal humans that somehow could fight with their hair. Just like strange shit like that. But I feel like deep down, I wish that like somebody would start like airing that again, because though I really have come to appreciate the battle sequences in the modern Dragon Ball Super stuff, like in the Tournament of Power, I honestly do miss the original Dragon Ball and the dynamics the characters had there before everything became like intergalactic.
Yeah, there's something to it. Something to the sweet science.
I was just thinking go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just thinking with, you know, we were joking about the 20 episode long power up sessions that, you know, pervade the original run of like Dragon Ball, post Dragon Ball, but pre Dragon Ball Z Kai, I guess. Between that and like Dragon Quest, I'm trying to think, is there anything Akira Toriyama has not like purposely wasted a lot of our time with?
Damn. You know?
Well, like,
I mean, Chrono Trigger counts. He drew it. Huh? It was it. I feel like Dragon Ball, Chrono Trigger counts. Yeah, he did. Chrono Trigger was,
yeah.
Oh, no, we wasted a lot of time on Chrono Trigger.
You're right. Chrono Trigger's pretty zippy. Okay.
But it has and like 15 against, endings.
Nothing
but
against.
It's so short. Well,
yeah, but that's value.
Yeah, that's they're easy to get to once you get the good one.
Yeah.
You can get plus, every ending in that game faster than halfway through Dragon Quest VII.
That's also true.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Nothing against Dragon Quest. It is my favorite game series, but it is a warm bath of a game. It's like,
yeah, no, that's you're not wrong.
It absolutely does not respect your time.
You're going to marinate in it. Yeah,
exactly.
Stewed gaming.
I just cleaned out some dust from like near my scroll wheel on my mouse, and it felt real good. And I want everyone else to revel in that feeling of just getting gunk out of their mouse. And it,
oh yeah, I run through like the little crevices of mine, because mine's like a Republic of Gamers like gamer mouse, so it's got like all this texture to it, and like I like to dig in there with like toothpicks and stuff to get the gunk out to clean
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely, yeah. I remember doing that with like N64 and GameCube controllers. It felt real good. You just get a nice line of dirt out of the crevasse.
I do that with the rim of the analog stick on the Xbox controllers.
Ugh. Yeah, still doing that with my Switch Pro controllers.
I need to start using those damn.
So should we do a show?
Yeah, I guess.
No,
we didn't start
pushing the record button.
No,
yeah,
what are you Dragon doing? Ball.
I mean, once again, you've lost the good stuff.
I mean, I've been recording it, but that wasn't good stuff, was it?
Hey, you.
Oh, you think that's not good stuff? Just wait till you hear what comes next.
I mean, I could keep it all if you guys want me to.
I'll have you know, people love Dragon Ball nostalgia. They will eat that shit up or die trying.
Oh no, we're not going to see how it goes. We're making a decision we'll go, now. Am I doing an intro?
We'll go to the, or are we just go to going? The home for infinite losers?
Why can't we have both? I still want Joe to do his thing, but still I don't want
intro.
To
just, like
you could start the show.
Yeah, do the intro. This is what we call a cold open, Joe. This is what we call a cold open. Do the intro.
Well, no, the cold open would precede the intro theme.
Never. We're friends.
Hey, everybody. It's the SML podcast. This is Joe. How's everybody doing tonight? It's a party cast. Brooke's here. Tim's here. Hey. Chris is here. Purnell's here. How's everybody doing? Yeah, thanks. Thanks for filming.
Noticed that you never see Joe and Tim in the same place at the same time. This has been bothering me.
That is very suspicious. I think you're on to something.
I can guarantee we're not the same person.
I don't know.
I think Tim could cut me open and sleep inside me like a Tauntaun at this point.
Absolutely, yeah. I am also, I'm also a big boy, but...
Tim, keep that in mind for a particularly snowy Magfest.
Every Magfest.
Damn. Oh my God, I can't recall the last time I went to one.
Everyone doing?
It was just cold. Oh, no, we're talking about Magfest, so good, I guess.
I'm doing good. I'm still riding high off the, happy late 800th birthday to the SML podcast. You know, in podcast years, every episode is a year. Fun fact.
Yeah.
So.
Which means I'm about to die.
The 801st anniversary is tonight.
Yeah, 801. Like,
Immortal Vampire vibes only.
Unless you did another episode over the weekend that we don't know about.
No.
Oh.
I don't have the patience for that shit.
Or do you?
No, I really don't.
Yeah.
No. Anyway.
See, I told you all the good stuff was before the show started.
The good stuff was before the show started. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess we're keeping all that. So,
Tim, piggybacking after what we were talking about before the show started, as an anime dad, are there any other shows that you are rewatching that you're showing your son for the first time, anime stuff, that does hold up to you or, like, stuff that really doesn't hold up?
I'm trying to, he could probably stand to watch Dragon Ball Z again at this point. We watched it when he was like three. He probably doesn't remember shit about it other than, just generally recognizing who Goku is. We watched, it wasn't something I watched as a child, but we've watched like three seasons of My Hero Academia together. Ooh,
that's a good,
we got to watch more of that. I did introduce him to Big O, which is a classic. What the hell else have we watched? He started watching Naruto, which I am a Naruto hipster. I was watching the Naruto anime when there was like 40 some episodes, I think.
What are they up to now?
Before it was cool.
Well, it's over. It actually ended. They had some restraint, but there was hundreds, and it went on for a very long time.
But Tim, what about Boruto?
No, absolutely not. No, So, but he didn't stick with that.
To hear that.
Yeah, like, me too. But
original Naruto was actually great. Like before they went again, like all like crazy, fox powers and mess. It was like, wow, they're ninjas and they have ninja techniques. How will they use this against this guy? Like, I loved that area of the show.
Yeah, like the first 50 episodes were like really good, and then it kind of became something else. And I'm not saying it became something that was bad, but then that's kind of when the whole scope of the show blew out into much larger things. Yeah, it just went crazy. What the heck else have we? There's something else that keeps bubbling up in my brain, and I keep forgetting. But I can't remember. Oh, he's watched tons of freaking Sailor Moon.
Yes.
Okay. Now we get Purnell and I are like way too excited about this.
Yeah, which is great because whenever Tuxedo Mask is hitting on Sailor Moon, my son is now trained to yell at the TV. She's 14.
That's awesome. Oh my God, I want to sound bad at that as well.
Yeah, he's watched tons of Sailor Moon. I can't remember what else at this point. Yeah, he has like a couple Sailor Moon posters up in his room. Well, nice. He did, but I think the dogs ate one and the other fell down, and his deadbeat dad needs to get it put up again. And he has a My Hero poster up there.
I haven't watched My Hero. I've had one person recommend it. Okay.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed that show.
It's definitely does the whole, like, typical, it does like a lot of the general, like, shonen stuff, but it's interesting to watch it in this case. Like, I like the characters in it. I actually like the whole concept of, like, the superhero society and how their powers interact with each other. Like, it's entertaining. Like, I thought I would be burned out by shonen and stuff, but I wasn't when I watched
it. Faves of shonen, JoJo, Mob Psycho, like, all the good stuff. Yes. Shonen.
I like Mob that it has Mob a Psycho girl is the in best. It.
Yes, I like how, like, people have just weird powers. Like, nothing is, very few are, like, super straightforward. It's always like,
I'm Mr. Cement Man. Yeah. I control exactly. cement.
Yeah, it's like, there's Electric Guy, but it, like, fries his own brain. Because, you know, good.
Lost the power-up lottery.
Yeah.
But he can power his own house for a really, can't get a discount on his electric bill. He won't have a bill. He can sell it.
Which kitty is that, by the way, Joe?
Coltrane.
Coltrane, nice.
Yeah, she keeps jumping on me during the show.
My hero.
Yeah, I heard that. That's a little meow.
My baby.
I realized I'm not in the Twitch room, and I was like, I could be looking at this cat right now, not just hearing it.
Yeah, you missed out. She's adorable. Somehow she's my favorite, but I don't have an emote of her. I have to fix that.
Well, you know who's, you know who can fix that?
Yeah, me.
I just thought about something. Actually, Tim, you're a fan of Guilty Gear games, right?
Yes.
Ooh.
I have been. So I haven't played one since Revelator. But as you already know, the trailer came out yesterday for one of the characters that I originally bought Guilty Gear X2 for. And the freaking song for Bridget's trailer is fan fucking tastic. Like, yeah, I've been bopping it for like the entire day.
Pretty it's great.
Really good. What? Who has put this shit out? And it's like, Daisuke Ishiwatery. Of course it's that fucker. And Aisha for vocals. Like, he is a freaking musical genius.
Yeah, he is.
He is not. He's so amazing. So, it's like, I honestly kind of want to buy the game now to hear more of the music in it. Yeah, I know people are hearing this and going, why don't I just get the soundtrack? I'm like, well, I like to hear it in the game.
I mean, Strive is a really popular Guilty Gear, as evidenced by the fact it had the most entries of any game at Evo. It is pretty hot business right now. Yeah, it broke a million. Yes, it was. It had the most entries of. That's why it went on last at Evo. It had the most entries, and it was like not close. If that I recall,
is awesome to hear.
Yeah, it sold a million copies, which is, you know, the weight lifting for like Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat, but for an anime fighting game, that's a lot.
Especially because it's only on PlayStation or PlayStation and PC.
It's on PC, yeah.
So it's missing out on two platforms of sales. Imagine if it was on Switch and imagine if it was on Switch. Holy shit!
Imagine if that thing could run on Switch. He ain't got fucking Revelator on there. I don't think so.
Are there less fighting games in the Xbox community? How does that work?
Yes,
commonly a PlayStation PC thing.
Part of that is because Street Fighter V was exclusive to PlayStation.
Yeah,
Because of that, you know, tournament organizers in the scene just kind of naturally moved to PlayStation because it's like, well, tournament organizers aren't going to buy a bunch of Xboxes when you need PlayStations for Street Fighter.
Yeah,
so.
In the 360 days, the Xbox was the fighting game place, and then things switched over when Street Fighter went exclusive, and we'll see what happens this gen, because Street Fighter 6 is going to be on both platforms.
Yeah, but now they'll have cross-play, and that was not a thing back then.
Yeah.
I think...
I'm not a fighting game savant, but I definitely feel like when it comes down to like fighting game controllers, if people still use cross-pads, mind you... I think that's where Xbox shined over the PlayStation controller for me. Like, I like the buttons, but when you get to the nitty gritty, the cross pad is important, and I can do moves better with that Xbox cross pad than with the.
Yeah, people use all kinds of different controllers now. It used to be all arcade sticks. Now people, they use game pads, they use hitboxes, which are arcade sticks that don't have sticks on them. They're button inputs instead. Yeah.
You use them? Yeah. What do you use, Tim?
I just use a controller. That's most comfortable for me. I'm not that serious. Well, you know, I have arcade sticks in the house. I'm interested in getting like another arcade stick, for a modern system. But really mine, I need something that works with the PlayStation because I have a bunch of fighting games on there. I've been looking at some stuff, but we'll see. But Evo is pretty awesome.
Sticks that work on multiple platforms.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know if there's ones that work between I imagine there has to be some that work between Xbox and PlayStation at this point. They go between PC and console at this point.
Yeah.
Now I'm wondering. Yeah, I don't think you really have to buy something per console at this point. But yeah, well, this one's a PS4 PC version. It's probably split along console lines in some cases. I'm looking at a Hitbox cross-up, which does have a stick, but puts the directional buttons on the right side. A lot of interesting things happening with trying to keep people from having carpal tunnel from playing fighting games.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of fighting games, have you played Multiverses, Tim?
I checked it out I did fire it up and just kind of dicked around in practice mode real quick. That game's like menus are off-putting, as it is with any kind of free-to-play game. Seemingly they have to be that way. I haven't really gotten into it yet.
I'm sorry, has anyone the played way it? That you answered, I just wanted to say that the way that Tim answered that was, it reminded me of a kid, and mom is like, did you eat those cookies before dinner? Like most, Mostly no.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, but, you know.
Well, we did not eat them.
Yeah. Cookies were eaten.
But, yeah, I'll probably mess around with it some more. I'm not always the biggest into the being competitive with Smash likes.
No. So. I want to get into it. I don't like the whole limited roster. They only have like 18-19 people right now, obviously more are coming. Well, for a fighting game, look at Smash Brothers.
There's 900 characters in Smash Brothers. Remember,
you can't compare it to Smash Brothers.
Not only is it a new product, but also it's not, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, Tim, this is one of those games where you play, you earn like creds or whatever from playing matches, and you unlock new characters and costumes and stuff with it. So
I thought I made it clear that I didn't really play it that much.
I figured you played enough to answer that.
No, not really. No,
you were in the menus.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how the economy works. I just kind of got through so I could get into there was like a brief tutorial, and then I got into just like the practice mode and just kind of dicked around a little bit.
Well, if someone's listening to this and they can correct me on it, let me know. But I think that's their gimmick there. Like, you'll be trying to get, you some characters, and you have to unlock others by playing the game and or buying them.
Buy them with gold, or if you buy any of the Founders packs, you get a certain number of character unlock tokens. From like, I think it's anywhere from like 15 to 30, depending on which tier you buy, which is another thing that kind of turns me off. I feel like I have to buy the top tier to get the most out of it, or I feel like I'm missing out on stuff.
Best value. So you just got to turn that off. Turn off that FOMO.
Yeah.
If I'm going to be getting back into any fighting, I'm going to be getting back into Guilty Gear, just because I'm watching some of the the fights at Evo. I just remembered like how dope that game is. Or Street Fighter. I feel like, I don't know, at this point I'm just waiting for Street Fighter 6 to get back into Street Fighter. But Street Fighter 5 has come a long way since when I played a lot of it. Like multiple seasons of characters that I have not really touched. So I've been. Well, it's just like playing it on, it's just, everything moves so slowly on the PlayStation version that I got, just loading menus and fights. Maybe I haven't played it on PlayStation 5. Maybe it's faster, but I have definitely been circling the $25 gets you everything for that game pass to just like, now that everything is out for it and there's going to be no more characters. But now I'm also kind of waiting to see, like, are they just going to release another, Turbo Championship edition of the game for me to buy so I can get it all at once and be done with it? I don't know.
That's,
I
feel like, how they get you. No, I don't know.
No, that is how they get it. Well, it's,
phrase.
It's a good one.
Back in the 90s, I would drop, $70, $80 every year for a new version of Street Fighter.
Yeah, but, and we had to watch the whole Dragon Ball Z bullshit. Kids today,
absolutely. Fucking A. Yeah, we had to wait till the next day. We couldn't just binge it. What the hell is that? Give me a break.
You had to wait till the next week sometimes, depending on which one airs. Like, wait till next week. Fuck you, Goku. Just use the spirit bomb.
And now I'm...
I was going to say, we came up in an era where they combined Dragon Ball Z and Street Fighter, and we didn't get to play it.
Oh my god, he's right.
Yeah, but not, you know, now... Nowadays, I see like a $25 season pass for a bunch of characters in a fighting game, and I'm like, I don't know. I used to pay like over $100 in today's monies back in the 90s for just like four more characters in some different colors. Just buy the fucking season pass and have some fun.
You liked it, baby.
It'll be $80 for a new Street Fighter 2 and for four new characters, three of which are racist.
Yeah. They also included the season pass with a review code for Strive last year, so it wouldn't hurt me to give this game some money.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, just we can get the season pass, you get you pretty much cover season, because they get you the one for season one, right? So you'd have to buy season two.
Yep. Yeah. And Bridget's officially trans now.
I heard about that. It's exciting.
Pretty exciting, yeah, pretty cool.
One thing I found funny, people were like really shocked that was the reveal. Like, I read that. I was like, makes sense. Like, that, like, it really was like, this makes sense. And people were like, bullshit. Like, what?
I don't know who this character is.
So Bridget was, again, that was one of the characters that made me buy the game in the first place. It was a character who lived in a town. The story they wrote for them was the character lived in the town where there was a story that if two male twins were born, their town would be like cursed to like fall apart or fail or some bullshit. So his parents made it so that he went around as a boy, or as a girl rather, when he was born as a male. So it was like, okay, well, this is the story. It's a boy who was raised as a girl in a habit.
It's important to recognize that this town would execute one of the twins because they were so over the top.
Well,
about it. Yeah.
This definitely tracks with like certain tropes.
Sure.
So the character ran around the whole game, you just fighting and like asserting themselves as like, I'm actually a guy. And I was like, what's this girl doing here fighting with yo-yos and shit? But I know between just Guilty Gear and the characters that Daisuke Ishiwari wrote, he did a lot of stuff where it was like, this is what I can do for the climate that we have right now. But now that the climate is cool with it, boom, I'm doing it. There it is. There's your big reveal. So I was like, of course they're trans. Of course Bridget's trans. Mm-hmm. Because that's how they were originally written, but they couldn't say it because it wasn't accepted at the time.
Yeah.
So,
gotcha.
People don't realize, like, he really did like pave the way in Japanese media for some things like that to be more like normalized. I feel that way about the Persona series too. I didn't start playing until Persona 4, but like, if you look at when that came out in Japan, like some of the complaints we have about not being so gender inclusive in that game, like the game's still pretty ahead of its time, considering the climate, all the way. Even though there are a couple things like I wish that were different, of course.
All the stuff with Naoto is very interesting and
Sad part is, like, for as intense as Naoto's was, I remember all the articles were pretty much like freaking out about Kanji, and then you play the game and you actually experience the scenarios like, what is everybody so freaked out about? This makes fucking sense. This makes absolute sense.
And then they still, because of the climate, in my opinion, kind of like phone it in the end. So like, if you really are a hater, you can kind of think whatever you want about Kanji if you're not in a place to be able to consider like sexuality. But I don't want to go too far into this because we're in mega spoilersville, but hits
play Persona 4. It's coming out soon on modern consoles.
Yeah. So boy.
So cool.
We can't even spoil it when we get the review code. Like, well, it's been years. Check it out.
I like how you just automatically assume we're getting review keys for that.
Hey,
if they want some easy, good reviews, pass them along.
What kind of goat do I have to sacrifice to what god here? Like, I need somebody on the show to have it. Like, that would be awesome.
Also, sometimes I'll admit there's like certain companies where like, obviously this isn't an actual trope, but I'm like, if a company's going to be like, hey, you guys should have the honor to review our game. It's like, maybe you give it to a company or a site where, like, multiple people on the team own, like, every fucking game they've put out that they bought with their own money. Like, you get a review code and you still buy the goddamn game. You're like, why'd you buy it? I just wanted to talk about it. I wanted the code to talk about it. I'm buying your games. Like, yeah, how about giving us that shit?
As I look at my copy of River City Girls sitting behind me.
That's awesome.
Oh, I just now bought a game that I'm reviewing tonight.
Ooh, what is it?
Oh. Oh, should we talk about it?
Segway time!
Chris gets to go first. No, just kidding. Jeff's going to kill me.
All right. First game up to talk. I don't have the copy, so I can't do that part.
First game is Chris's game, developed and published by some company.
Oh, I mean, if you want to do the intro, Pernell...
I'm going to do it like that. Hey, the first game to talk about is Chris's game, developed and published by some company, provided to us by that company and their PR group, brought to you in part by Hallmark.
What the fuck? Wow. I like that. This is Pernell's, like, Tim, this Joe roleplay.
Everyone wants to be me, I guess.
Hey.
That's right. I drink all the soda I want.
Have, like, how right, many? Sounds good to me. Okay.
All right, first game to talk about tonight is Sword and Fairy Together Forever, developed by Softstar and East Asia Soft, published by East Asia Soft, released August 4th on PS4 and PS5 for $39.99. Weaving its tail between three clans of human, deity, and demon, Sword and Fairy Together Forever puts you in command of a memorable party of characters, each with unique personalities, motives, skills, strengths, and weaknesses. Only together can they shape the future. Pernell, what is going on in Sword and Fairy Together Forever?
I kind of wish you said a few of the characters' names, because that's one of the biggest issues I've had with my experience with this game. Is like, suck it, remembering all the names. Because, well, you play as a multitude of characters, but the main character in your unit goes by the name of Yu Qingxu. She is a member of the Jianxu sect, which is pretty much a sect who is devoid of spirits. And as a result, their clan kind of went into a bit of like a, not an exile, but they became like a bit of a weaker clan. But she still works to kind of help protect people in a neighboring village, and someday hope to build her community back up. But through a series of unexpected events, she is roped into interesting situation where the fate of the world kind of lies on her shoulders, along with unexpected visitor from the deity realm and another individual where they kind of work against fighting against the demon realm. As you can tell, though I am enjoying the game, I am really struggling with some of the terms here, and I'll get into why shortly, admittedly.
I was going to say, I was going to pull up the store page and like read off some of the names and stuff, but the store page doesn't have any names.
Well, I do also can tell you, because his name is short, the deity's name that you roll with, his name is Jiwu. So... the way this game works, though, that is easy to get into, because that's good old-fashioned beatdown magic. In this game, you portray one of a number of characters in a battle party. It grows and grows over time, but thankfully you can kind of switch between them on the whim, and if you choose not to, they kind of fight on their own in a battle party. As you're running around in a pretty large, fairly big world. As you run around, you can kind of fight with a series of combo attacks using the light attack button and the heavy attack button. Usual spiel that you're kind of familiar with. Early on, you don't have much that you can do with it. You can kind of just do like mash, light, finish with a heavy, or rock a heavy in different sequences, but you'll unlock new combos that will allow you to do different types of attacks based on how many times you rock the light leading into the heavy attack. In addition to that, you'll earn new spells, which can be linked to your face buttons, which can be triggered by hitting the R1 button, holding it down, and unleashing an attack in that manner. And the attacks in this game are surprisingly elaborate, even the early ones you get. So the downside to them, of course, is that some of them take a little bit of time to wind up, so you'll leave yourself vulnerable to getting your ass handed to you while you're doing so. But they are fun to play off with, and if you are the type of person who doesn't really want to get bogged down by a lot of difficulties, you can just turn the expert mode off, or rather leave it off, And which is actually, believe it or not, something I did for once in this game.
Ooh.
And the combat is actually, yeah, I didn't want to get bogged down in the case that I was like, well, I want to at least be able to play the game before I can talk about it. the game is a, you know, because this kind of game, it always throws me food. When I have a bunch of other party members running around doing their own thing on expert mode, I usually get rocked because they die without my input. That's Persona 5 Strikers, by the way. Damn game. But it's actually, the combat is really manageable in this game. The world exploration is pretty cool, too. It's not a completely interconnected world, which is actually kind of a smart design choice on their part. Each area is a series of connected areas at times, but you can pick up and move to new regions by flying to them. It's a single button press you hit off the world map screen, and it takes you to a place where you can kind of select the new location you want to go to. And while you're there, you'll explore just like any sort of hub environment. Different areas, different people you can talk to, stores where you can purchase equipment, which, by the way, can be upgraded or enhanced by using special items and going to a blacksmith. Increase their critical damage, their attack damage. You can also acquire new spirits, which is one of the main quest lines of the game. And as you acquire them, you can fight with them using special attacks, and you can feed them spirit fruit to make them stronger as well. Something I kind of like is that this has a sort of weird Pokemon-esque vibe to it. The one gripe I have, though, well, I guess two. No, it's one. The main gripe I primarily have with this game is that, for as action-oriented as it is, it's completely subtitled, which under normal circumstances, I'm actually kind of okay with, because I've gotten used to reading while battling over the years of playing games like this. The problem is, maybe it's because I'm old as shit, but the text is in white, and it's kind of streaming across the bottom of the screen while all kinds of colors are flashing behind it. And it sometimes becomes hard to read the text because there's nothing that kind of flushes behind it. Like in the old RPGs where they had the window box behind it.
Yeah.
So it was flush on a solid colored background. Makes it a lot easier to read this kind of stuff. So
there's a lot of games that have that problem. They don't have options for outlines or backgrounds or stuff with their captions, subtitles.
And it makes me sad too, because in this game, they do give you the option to increase the size of the game text. Not the side quest and main quest, the pointer assistance text, mind you, just the subtitle text. And I set it to extra large, which does make it easier to read, but it doesn't absolve me of the problem of this color splash. If they were to ever patch this game and just slap like a window option up there, that would be really freaking sweet. Just saying. But when I can read the text, I have enjoyed the conversations the characters have and the banter. And there's a lot of dialogue in this game. This isn't one of those games where it's action first, story second. It kind of shares the pedestal. So you will be dealing with those things. But the characterizations are pretty good. I now remember there was two things that kind of clicked with me in a weird way. Related to the subtitles. Sometimes the subtitled English can be a little janky. Not enough to make you go, I have no idea what these fuckers were talking about. But it can be enough to make you go, that totally broke my line of reading when I was reading this line of text. Like, I had to stop myself because the sentence didn't flow like I was expecting it to. I mean, it's a small thing, but it's enough to make you go, I wish it wasn't the case, considering that the text is moving without my determination. So I kind of have to read this. So, but it's not enough to ruin the game by any freaking means. I have come to enjoy this game a lot. The narrative is good. I like the characterization. The combat is fast and fun. You will drown in side quests in this game, by the way. So if you're the type that needs to do every side quest, good fucking luck. But on the positive, they are very generous with side quest markers. Like, they just pop up on the map if you bring it up, even ones you haven't accepted yet. So if you want to undertake them, you can just run up to them and see what they want. Usually it'll be something like kill these guys or deliver this stuff, you know, typical hoogamagog. But it does occasionally lend some characterizations to the world. Like, you come across like shady grifters and missing children and, you know, and fighting spouses, you know, just family, you know, typical community based things, you know. It's a good game. I didn't know what to expect of this because I'd never heard of this franchise, and apparently it's a long standing franchise overseas. I am glad to see it finally get a chance to make an appearance over here, because this is a worthy entry to put it on display. I know graphic files might find themselves occasionally gone, but you know, this doesn't look like a grade A plus 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 game. Like, yeah, maybe not, but it doesn't look like a grade A plus game. Graphics are nice. I'm fine with these graphics. I think the only issue I had with graphics at one point was a few areas where there's like a lot of people present and the camera kind of did a sweeping span of it, and the people just popped out of view when the camera scrolled too far away. Like, it wasn't like a subtle disappearance. It was like, gone. So I kind of chuckled at that, but whatever. That's technology. It's not, again, it's not a game ruiner. It's just something you kind of chuckle at while you play the game. And this isn't, they're not charging you $70 for this game either. So get over it.
Yep. They are charging $40. So what are your thoughts on this one?
I think this is a buy it, to be perfectly honest with you. It's a fun time. It's outside of the typical bucket of RPGs we come to look for, like, you know, this usual Square Enix bubble. And it's nice. It involves a lot of vibes that I'm not used to seeing in a game, like an RPG. So I'm good for it. Buy it.
Cool. All right, next up is South of the Circle, developed by State of Play, published by 11-Bit Studios, released August 3rd on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $12.99. South of the Circle is an emotional narrative experience exploring the relationship between Peter and Clara, Cambridge academics caught up in political conflict of the Cold War. The story focuses on the weight of life choices between career, true love, and the desire to keep our promises. Tim, what's going on in South of the Circle?
What is going on in South of the Circle? Hey, it's another escapee from Apple Arcade. I feel like I played one of those last month, too.
Oh, is it?
Yes, it is, actually. Yeah, this was originally an Apple Arcade release back in you know, when that started up. Or, well, 2020, it says. But, yeah, I think it might have been on PC for a while now, too. Anyways. Oh, wait, no, it just came out. Yeah, yeah. So it just a lot of things escaping from Apple Arcade right now. Fantasia needs to do that, please. Anyways, this game is a narrative adventure game. You are a climate scientist in, like, the 60s in Britain. You are a fellow at Cambridge who's struggling to, I don't know. Well, that's not where the story starts. That's kind of where the story goes at some points. The game starts with you crashing in Antarctica, a long way from Cambridge. So you're this guy, Peter, and he is crashed on a plane in Antarctica with the dude you're with who was flying the plane. He's like, you know, my leg's fucked up. You got to get out there and find somebody, you know, there's stations and bases and stuff around, and get us out of this mess. So as you are tromping around Antarctica and trying to find help, and trying to get yourselves out of there, you keep flashing back to, Peter's earlier points in Peter's life, mainly around his time as an academic in Cambridge, which he still is. And he is, you know, struggling with like, it's like a doctorate or some such. He's struggling with it with this paper to get published. He meets one of his fellow academics, Clara, who is his friend and research and, you know, academic partner and eventual love interest, as he's trying to get this paper together and trying to get his life together and dealing with just kind of the after effects of having a not great childhood with his father, and the kind of Cold War tensions and, you know, looming possibility of nuclear war bubbling up around him. And like, there's a lot of ways in which this game is pretty awesome, and only one way in which it is not great, in my opinion. So the game does a beautiful job as you're of just shifting from one scene to the next, of just like, okay, you're moving through Antarctica, and just kind of the scene will gradually fade to you know, a lecture hall in Cambridge, or you'll be driving some kind of mobile vehicle in Antarctica, and suddenly you're just driving a car back in England. It jumps back and forth to different time periods and different places in Peter's life very elegantly. And the story, like the voice acting in this game is very good. And I think just kind of the overall like graphical way the game is presented, like looks, it's very engaging. You know, it's not going for high fidelity. It is going for a style. And I think that style really works for it. It's more of a dreamy animated quality that looks great. Your main interactions with the game, like there's moments where you are actually controlling your character. Like the game is guiding you pretty specifically from one point to another. You're not just going to wander off like on the glacier and not know where you're going. Like the camera kind of forces your attention to where you need to go. So there are occasions when you are, you know, using the stick to pilot a vehicle or just make Peter limp his ass through the snow around. But you'll be engaging in dialogue, and the way you converse with other characters is like these little kind of bubbles will pop up on the screen. And each one has a different symbol in it, which will represent like a different tone to your response, which could be like more nervous, more like firm, like hopeful, just like more brighter and happier. Just kind of, it's you're not like picking like specific dialogue lines. You're just kind of picking the tone that you want Peter to respond with. And there are moments in in his flashbacks to his past where you will make more significant decisions, you may be led to believe. And that there will be kind of different icons, like one fairly, one I can reveal it. Like a lot of this game, I don't want to talk about because it would just, the whole game is the story and the narrative. And the more I talk about that, like the more is spoiled. But, Clara asks you if you want, how much sugar you want in your coffee. And you can say 1 cube, 2 cubes, or 0 cubes. And it will take that little icon and it kind of puts it like there's about 7 or 8 of these throughout the game. It kind of, when you answer one of them, it kind of takes that answer and tucks it up, puts it in the pocket, which makes you rub your hands together and go, ooh, where is this going? Which leads me to the problem with this game. It's going fucking nowhere. So the arc of the narrative is very good, and it builds to its climax pretty well. There's a pretty lengthy amount of a very lengthy, like one shot conversational scene that I felt went on for quite a while, like right as you're getting to the end of the game. And I was just kind of like, OK, come on. Like, I can feel that I am towards the end. But here we are yakking in the plane for quite a long period of time. And then it's like, as you're getting to this, like the end point, and I guess, you know, the point at which you may or may not be saving yourself from being stranded in Antarctica, you have a flashback, and kind of all the choices you made in the game are resolved in a incredibly unsatisfying and confusing way that really left me with a bad taste. Like just like the last 5 minutes of the game, I was just kind of like, whoa, that didn't really come together very well, did it? In the end. And yeah, that's a bummer. I was also kind of like hoping just to see some kind of like readout of my dialogue choices of like how many times I had answered, you know, one way or another or another or another or in certain situations, just like more of like, just more data kind of breaking down.
Yeah, I like when games
my actions do that throughout the game. Yeah, this doesn't do that. But it's more just like I was looking for like kind of that variance at the end, and the way they chose to resolve that was just very unsatisfying for me, which is a bummer because, you know, the game had me on its hook for 98-99% of the playthrough with me being engaged in kind of like, you know, seeing Peter's past and his relationship with Clara and kind of the mystery of like, what the fuck is going on in Antarctica? Cause it is not all as it may seem. And then kind of, you know, part of that getting resolved, I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But then just like kind of the way the other stuff went down, I was just like, really? That's it? That's what we were building to this whole time? Okay, I guess. All right. Indeed.
Yeah, well, the game is $12.99, so it's not a huge investment. What are your thoughts on it?
It's a little tough. So the game's about 3.5 hours long for more length conscious listeners. I think, you know, that price is fine for that, but just FYI, I do think it is worth a purchase. Like I said, 98% of the game is beautiful and does things like exceptionally well. And then it was just kind of at the end, I was just kind of like, oh, so if you have those expectations in mind going into it, and you'll be perhaps a little less disappointed than I was. But I think it's, you know, I have to keep in mind that like a lot of it takes a certain kind of like narrative, adventure game to really like suck me in and see it to the end. A lot of them I just kind of get bored with, or I bounce off of for other reasons, just bad writing, bad voice acting, just getting lost, in the game of being like, oh, I have to do like an adventure gamey, you know, thing of finding the lever to stick in the hole and pull the switch or what have you. So even like I have to keep me just getting to the end of it is an accomplishment and says something about the quality of this game, that I, you know, should recommend on to others, because a lot of these I don't see through to the end.
Cool. So overall, it seems like it might not be the best experience, but it's still something worth checking out.
Yeah, it's great. It's just that people like the ending. Yeah, just the ending was really, if it had stuck the landing, I wouldn't have any qualms with the game. But it didn't for me. So I have qualm, and I present qualm to you.
I would say if they do an update, we could check it back out. But this doesn't seem like the kind of game that could be fixed. No.
I mean, it's with what they wanted to do with their story. But so it goes.
Yeah, well. All right, well, Tim, that's it for you. You sticking around or are you heading out?
No, I'm going to head off to bed. It is closing in on 11. I will say that I'm recording this review on this new microphone that was provided to us for review, and I will be going into more detail on Thursday, right, Joe?
That's what we're doing. So, yeah, as long as David's joining.
Me and Dave are going to show up, and he's going to do one mic, and I'm going to do this mic. But hey, if I sound better than I ever have before, then obviously it's a good mic.
It's really good quality.
Logs are really coming in handy.
The best part is it's consistent. Normally, like when you drift away from the mic, you would get quieter, and then you would get really close, and it'd be super loud. But it's been very consistent, which is awesome.
I may have also not been moving very much, but I do think it has a larger range than my other microphone. So, we'll talk about it in greater detail on Thursday. So look forward to that, and I will catch you all later. Good night.
Night night.
Next time for the SML podcast featuring Tim.
He's a little too good at that voice, y'all.
Tune in next time. But for now. Next up on the SML podcast is Hooked on You. I can't keep that shit up.
I love that.
All right, next up is Hooked on You, developed by PsyOp, published by Behavior Interactive, released August 3rd on Steam for $9.99. Welcome to Murderer's Island, your companions, four dead sexy killers who, underneath their murderous exteriors, just want a little romance. Flirt your way into their hearts, uncovering dark twists along the way. Will you find true love, forge friendships, or get hacked to death? Brooke, you were excited about this one. Tell us about it.
I was really excited. This is the first game that I've asked you for that's actually even out yet. So this is a big, big day for me. But you actually got, Joe, as you may recall, since you did it, you got us two codes for this game after I found out about it and asked for it. But you got it pretty late last week, and none of these jabronis took the second code over the weekend.
First of all, it was never offered to me. I don't know what you're talking about.
Someone needs to read the Discord more.
We're about to give you a screenshot of the Discord. But anyway, like the hero she is, my friend MJ took this code like yesterday. We both played the hell out of it yesterday, and I played it a lot Sunday. And she even wrote us some nice review notes, so I'm actually going to start with what she has to say, if you don't mind. So here goes. I'm shuffling papers, so it sounds legit, even though this is just an email from her. Okay.
Just stack the papers on the desk.
I got a stack of papers just for this, so nobody keeps paper on their desk anymore. All right. So here it goes. I watched a vampire film when I was young, and the memories of that experience haunted me into my early teens. I kept bulbs of garlic in my headboard and slept with the covers wrapped around my neck until I developed a soothing meditation in which I somehow made the king of vampires fall in love with me. Obviously, that meant I was safe from all vampires. You can make of that what you will, but clearly the idea of wooing murderous monsters is not new to me. Though rarely is it as apparent as it is in Hooked on You, the Dead by Daylight spin-off dating sim. The game starts after you wash ashore with only the clothes on your back, and no memory of how you came to be here. After a strange conversation with both an unseen narrator and the ocean, yes, presumably the body of water, you are presented with four deadly bows to choose from. Trapper, a masked, hulking mound of muscles stuffed into an old-school strongman's costume. Huntress, an Amazonian woman in a flounced dress with a bloody bunny mask obscuring the top half of her face. Wraith, a morose, mud-daubed fellow in matching Hawaiian print trunks and shirt. And Spirit, a ghostly goth bombshell with chunks of her body mysteriously absent. I stumbled along without a guide, eventually zeroing in on Wraith, the character who seemed the most interested in me based on my decisions. I didn't save often, figuring I would need to start over to get a good end anyway. I grew to regret this as the game lacks a vital function, the ability to fast forward through previously read text after dying several times. I know, dude. Oh. After dying several times and realizing none of my saves were salvageable, I found a guide, started from the beginning, and successfully romanced the muscle-bound elitist Trapper. I was pleasantly surprised by how much Trapper's story diverged from Wraith's. Hooked on You doesn't have distinct routes that branch out from the main narrative. Instead, you pick a character to spend time with, unlocking unique scenes and dialogue options before returning back to the common route. Looping back to the same points can make a game feel repetitive upon subsequent playthroughs, but the story varies enough to keep it fresh and engaging. The only other thing that frustrated me was the minigame. Visual novels aren't known for requiring great hand-eye coordination, and in Hooked on You, it is always the same damn game. I've been informed it is the same minigame that is a core mechanic in Dead by Daylight. Thankfully, failing it isn't particularly punishing. If you're using a guide, you can get enough other right answers to get the good end, where you profess your love to your chosen murderer and get a sexy CG. CGs, literally content graphics, are images you unlock at pivotal moments, jeez, in a visual novel. I do wish the game included a CG gallery, because I had to dig through Steam to find the sultry image of Trapper in a... Well, that would be a spoiler. Aside from the story, the art is bright and clean, a jarring juxtaposition for some of the more macabre elements, such as rotting heads and bloody handprints. I do have a few nitpicky questions, mainly, why does Huntress, with her glorious tree trunk legs, have a thigh gap? But all the characters are sexualized in a similar fashion, which is nice to see in a game like this. And in the good end, at least the two I've gotten so far, Huntress and Trapper, you get to have sex with your paramour. It is not described, it happens off screen, but then again, this is not a particularly erotic game. Though, the number of guides on Steam baiting folks to click through for tips on how to unlock the non-existent 18+ DLC may have PSYOP reconsidering. While Hooked on You is unvoiced, the background music does a good job of making the tropical setting feel immersive, and the other sound effects are unobtrusive and effective. The user interface is clean and intuitive, though lacking in a few features. Please let me speed through text that I've read. As a bonus, the menu screen with various characters popping in and out of frame proved utterly irresistible to my cat, so you may have an additional bit of entertainment for the feline friends in your life. Overall, this is a delightful way to spend an afternoon at a very affordable $10. I'd recommend this for fans of unconventional comedic dating sims that play fast and loose with horror tropes like Monster Prom or Lovingly. And that is MJ's half of this review. She can be found at Bad Endings Found on Twitter, by the way. Really classical visual novel handle, by the way.
You'll have to shoot me a link so I can include it in the show notes.
I will. Maybe it's going to come off a little bit as me getting my friend to do my dirty work here, but basically couldn't agree more. Pretty much every part of these notes. I really only have a couple things to add here. I want to hone in on the point MJ makes about not being able
really
to skip.
I just have a couple of names I want to cross out and write my own name in.
But yeah, I want to hone in on the point she makes about not being able to skip or fast forward dialogue you've already been through. He's not playing around, y'all. Not having this function in a visual novel, let alone like a dating game visual novel, is like, it's unheard of. It's honestly crazy AF that they didn't build this in. It's even weirder to have a visual novel without this feature that, as MJ also mentioned, doesn't split up into typical routes. So this just ends up in, like, you replaying large chunks of the game over and over again. If you die, if you can't salvage your save, or if you're just trying to romance even, like, more than one monster. It's weird because the main feature of this game is it has so much replayability, so it is a weird choice. So this sucks, no lie. However, it's a good frustration to have as far as these things go, because it means I do want to play this game multiple times. I'm on my third playthrough of this game right now. I love this game so much. I can't recommend this game enough. It is intimidatingly hilarious. This is a buy it from me. It's so funny. I coordinated with MJ earlier. It's a buy it from her too, 100%. I was talking to her earlier too about how good this game is. So we basically know each other from just both playing a shitload of visual novels. And I was like, dude, is this the funniest visual novel I have ever played? Like, I was just laughing my ass off the whole time. It's some of the, like, most laugh-out-loud narrative, like, single-player game writing I could think of. And I was like, is this the best one I've ever played? She's like, you may be right. And that's how I feel having never played Dead by Daylight. And each of the four monsters are monsters that are, like, antagonizing you in that survival game, I guess. And I know a lot of the jokes must be like, oh, wow, the monsters that once killed me are now my lovers. But, like, it's so funny even out of that context. Like, a lot of people are already, like, this game's getting good reviews across the board, too. A lot of people are loving it that haven't played Dead by Daylight. So, yeah, if that's how I feel having never played Dead by Daylight, what an achievement for the goofy, campy, horror dating game genre. I'll cap off this review because I know it's getting a little long. I just want to directly quote a character from the game that I really respect and I found myself very attracted to. It's the ocean. You know, a couple days ago, we were hanging out on Murder Island, where this game takes place. That's also the name of the reality TV show you're on in this game, by the way. So the ocean took me aside. He was like, hey, even if this place is an eternal prison of pain, and I'm not saying it is, even a place of extreme horror can still receive 5 out of 5, 10/10 thumbs up review if it was crafted with love. And or that's what you're into. Those words really resonated with me, man. Now, you may think this game is clearly just comedy. Nobody's going to be into this goofy monster shit non-ironically. But as MJ taught us at the beginning of her review of this game, and as I seem to unwittingly prove every week that I'm on the show, we out here. That's all I got for y'all on this one.
Beautiful. Sounds like maybe a good one. Hopefully, hopefully it comes to more platforms.
This game. This is like the fourth game I've like threatened to buy for you, so you'll play it. But like, I feel like the narrator is another version of you. Like, this is a really funny game, and I'm really happy that something made this lovingly is just like really good, dude. It's awesome.
Cool. All right. Well, that is it for you. You gonna stick around or are you heading out?
I'm out. I'm gonna go Betty bye like Tim.
Wow, it's only 8 o'clock there and you're going to bed?
I actually have a headache, but I drank a lot of caffeine because I wanted to do MJ's review justice and because I love you all very much.
Oh, we love you too.
Love you too. We'll be able to, drink some Pocari
Sweat.
We'll
get 8 hours of sleep while being consumed by the allure of caffeine. I don't know.
Dude.
But it was great to have you on the show with us today.
I'm crying to you, man. There. All right, good night, you guys.
Good night.
All right, next up we got Lost Epic, developed by Team Earth Wars, published by 108 Inc. Released July 28th on PS4, PS5, and PC for $24.99. Lost Epic is a 2D side-scrolling action RPG about a war between gods and humanity. The player becomes the deity-defying knight godslayer and explores the world known as Sanctum to bring the Pantheon of Six to their knees. Purnell, what is going on in Lost Epic?
So Lost Epic is a pretty much a 2D Souls-like game. Think Salt and Sanctuary in that sense, I would say. At the very beginning of the game, you are a silhouette of a character who is brought into an unknown world by an unknown benefactor. And almost immediately, you are thrust into the action sequence that is the game's goal, which is to defeat a series of gods that have enslaved this world and made it its own, thereby resulting in like a sort of like a, I guess, like a class of, I guess, like purgatory wrapped people. I don't call it the perished. Basically, think the undead or whatever in a Dark Souls game. It's the same general concept, you know. But again, this is not Dark Souls because that is a 3D exploration. This game is 2D. And the exploration of this game kind of takes place by exploring a map similar to what you'd expect from something like a Metroidvania. Oh, God, I said that. where you go from like screen to screen. They're interconnected areas. And as you explore them, you are attempting to ultimately locate these gods, defeat them, and be the hero of the day. as you're running around this environment, enemies will be in your way trying to essentially murder you. As you are battling them, you have access to light attack, heavy attack. Where did that come from? The last review I did? Nah, crazy. Anyway, you have a light attack and a heavy attack. You can do a series of combo attacks using a combination of those two buttons, and that attack type will vary depending on the types of weapons you're using, because there are a number of those in the game, too. Heavy weapons, light weapons, piercing weapons, beatdown weapons, you know. As you're exploring and fighting these monsters, you will occasionally come across situations where it's less of a enemy just on the screen and more like an enemy encounter, in which case the game will kind of lock you in place and you're stuck in like an arena type situation fighting for your life to defeat the enemies on screen. Other times it's just the enemies on the map and proper. As you are battling these enemies, every once in a blue moon, you'll see an exclamation mark appear above the enemy's head. If it's a red exclamation mark, get the hell out of the way, because you can't block it and you can't do much about it, so you got to dodge or get out of the way. However, if you see a yellow exclamation point, you can use one of your skills, your special attacks, known as a divine skill, to kind of block it or kind of counterattack it. And if you do so, you'll do extra damage. You will pretty much get yourself a little bit of a window of space to do more attacks on it. And more importantly, you'll even gain access to the ability to hit it with like a stunner attack. And what that is if you hit the enemy with enough damage, you will like max out a circular window, which indicates that they are capable of a critical attack if it maxes out by hitting the square button. It has like a little unique animation and all that good gobbledygook. As you fight enemies, you will also get resources, whether from them proper or from items on the ground. And when you get to the obligatory statue, which you can pray at, or character that's standing next to the statue, or just in general areas, you can use access to them to improve your weapons or change them into something completely different. But at the statue, if you decide you'd rather improve your stats in another way, you can spend your accrued anima, think souls, to level your character up. When you level up in this game, you get what's considered skill points. And when you get skill points, you get access to a skill tree, which you can apply to gain new, stat buffs. It kind of irks me that they call it a skill tree, or people refer to it as a skill point or skill points, because you're actually buying, more often than not, you're buying like stat increases. And at first I was kind of miffed about that. I was like, man, this skill tree looks kind of weak. I'm not really digging it. But then what I didn't realize is that at the bottom of the screen for the skill tree, it says page 1 out of 20. This game has a lot of skill unlocks to it. And they're not just obtained by way of leveling up. Sometimes you'll get them by just killing certain types of enemies a certain number of times. Or, to be perfectly honest, doing some things I don't even know. Sometimes I'll just be fighting a random monster. Like, boom, skill point. Like, where'd that come from? I have no freaking idea. And it'll outright just say, flat out, you just gained this skill. It'll turn to the page the skill is on. Bow, you got it. You might learn the ability to parry. You might gain a new special attack. You might gain access to a new weapon if you find the book that teaches it to you. All kinds of stuff. And the thing's expansive. So it kind of lends itself to a fun bit of exploration and discovery as you're constantly finding new moments where the book opens up and unlocks something special for you. Like a Souls game, if you die, you get transported back to the last statue you saved at or checkpoint you stopped at, but you're going signs whatever anima you had left over. And you can go back to try to retrieve that anima. If you die before you get there, though, it is gone for good. Yes, it's familiar territory, but it's not the end of the world. Visually, this game originally kind of put me off because it has that sort of like interconnected paper doll look to it.
See, love the visuals in this game.
Wait, you gotta let me finish. I agree with you though, but hold on. I want you to finish, but give me just a second. Like, I didn't like the visuals at first because it was like, it's kind of like paper doll looking visuals to them. And I even watched like a play of someone doing it on the PS Station, on the PlayStation View, where other people were playing their playthroughs of it. And I was like, this doesn't look very good. But when I was playing it for the first time and not being exposed to late game skills, in situations that I wasn't familiar with, I actually came to like it a lot more. I chose my character avatar design, so I was more attached to that character. And as I'm performing the skills that I know I'm executing, I can see the free flow and form that's taking place on the screen, whether it be for me beating the tar out of monsters or the monsters themselves getting tossed around like rag dolls. I came to appreciate it. So I would say if you are doing like I originally was doing by basing it off of what other people were watching, what other people do on the game, I recommend just going into it with an early game present, you know, feel instead, because the game feels differently when you're the one playing it from the start. And what were you going to say? Sorry.
I love the visuals in this game. The developers, Team Earth Wars, their previous game in Japan was known as Earth Wars. In America, it was Earth's Dawn. It reminds me of the visual style in there, obviously, because it's the same developer. But it makes me really, really bummed that the game's not on Xbox, because I actually paid to import the Japanese version of the game when it was never slated to get an American release.
Wait, so the game exists on Xbox, but just in Japan?
Not this game, Earth's Dawn.
Oh, Earth's Dawn.
Yeah.
Earth's Dawn.
I bought it as Earth Wars in Japan. And I went through all the hoops of like buying Japanese currency and setting up a Japanese account and buying it that way. And then they announced it for an American release with a different name. And now I have both of them, but I'm bummed that Lost Epic is not available on Xbox and it's only PlayStation and PC, because I was super, super interested in checking this one out. But I don't know. It's $25. What do you think of it?
I honestly think this is a quality product, yeah. And you're going to get a lot of game out of this for $25. Literally, the only thing I feel like I might need to mention for people who might not be into this sort of rub is that there is potential for there to have a grindy vibe to it in regards to like getting materials to upgrade your stuff and things of that nature. But from my experience playing games like, you know, like the Symphony of the Nights and all that kind of deal, that's kind of par for the territory sometimes too, like grinding out to get like cool new weapons or the materials to make said weapons or whatever. So, but I still feel like I needed to mention that because somebody might buy this for the action and walk away for the grind. But if you don't give two hoots about the grind because it's more of an excuse to beat the shit out of stuff, well, you got nothing to be worried about. It's a good talent. It's a fun game.
Cool. I might have to wishlist it on PlayStation and pick it up eventually. I don't play much on PlayStation. I'm bummed it's not available on another platform.
Sometimes you just got to do that thing where it's like if it's not on the platform, it's so not a big deal. But the moment it comes to the platform, I'm on it.
It's jumping shit. It's like the Mega Man Battle Network collection. I'm so excited about that game coming out, except for the fact that it's not coming to Xbox, so I'm not going to buy it. Fuck them.
I don't blame you.
Game that is on Xbox. Next up, Gale of Windoria, developed by Hit Point, published by Chemco, released August 5th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Windows 10, and Steam for $14.99. I believe it's available on Switch and PlayStation as well, but it wasn't announced when I first got the note, so shit. The Tetra Quartzes, the source of all life, have become sullied, and there is a growing sense of foreboding across the world. Shen, a young boy from the Citizens of the Wind, sets off on an adventure to purify the sullied Terra Quartzes and save his childhood friend. Chris, I'm guessing this is the one that you picked up on Switch.
It is.
Yay, I'm smart.
Yay. Well, yeah, and that I'll get to that. But Gale of Windoria, not to be confused with Windaria, which is an anime film from the 80s. anyways, because I was looking for stuff about Windoria on YouTube, mostly the music, and I accidentally found Windaria, and I've been watching it this whole time. anyways, so Gale of Windoria is the newest Chemco and Hit Point jam. Now, I usually cover the Chemco games, and most of them are X-Create as a developer, which is they're RPGs with a reputation for being a little bit samey. Having very similar assets and graphics and gameplay mechanics and stuff like that. And Hit Point is kind of the same, but they tend to do a lot more with the mold as far as that goes. Like, you know, of the games that they've released, like, I can point out many more differences between those games and, like, you know, could name some of the characters. but yeah, so their normal thing, starting with, you know, kind of back like it Justice Chronicles and things like that, was to have like kind of a more moving diagonally kind of view, you know, sort of like things are at a little bit of a different angle. By the way, this is a JRPG that is done in 2D sprites, kind of 32-bit style. So I shouldn't assume everybody's played the other games and actually say what genre this is. But yeah, they move a little bit more like that. They usually feature like battle systems that are like first person, kind of Dragon Quest-ish, with this kind of system that they build on that's really fun to me. And also, of course, they feature the poncho, which is a like their version of Dragon Quest's like slime. It's a little guy that bounces up and down, and the poncho is back for Gale of Windoria, so nice. Never fear. But lots of other things have changed in this game versus like even the last one, which the last one I reviewed was Armed Emeth, which again was radically different from Crystal of Orta, which is different from, you know, Monster Viator, etc. So yeah, Gale of Windoria features actually a very Final Fantasy-esque storyline here, and in fact, Windaria, I think, is a town in Final Fantasy Mystic Quest, which has a very similar plot to this one. So, you know, I'm not going to dock it too many points. Nobody cares about Mystic Quest.
Hey.
yeah, you got your JRPG protagonist, who is a kid, a knight in training. Literally, the moment you get beat up by your teacher for the first time, a bad wind comes in. You know, they detect danger and information that comes in on the wind, and some terrible monsters appear, and so they're like, oh no, we have to you know, we're in a mystical, like, you know, advanced, you know, people, but as soon as anything bad happens, we are immediately going to sacrifice our wind mage little girl. And said little girl happens to be your best friend, so you rescue her and run away, basically, and go out into the world. And the reason why these monsters are appearing is because the local thing is sullied. I forget what they called it, a quartz something.
Tetraquartzes.
Yeah, tetraquartz, yeah. Not to be confused with Tetrarch, which is, you know, that's another game that Hitpoint also made. The whole goal of it is basically to, you know, you run away with your friend and you go from, across the four lands, which are based on the four elements of, you know, wind, water, fire, and heart, and, you know, make a friend in each one, and they, you know, join your party, and eventually you figure out what's sullying these quartzes. Gosh darn it. You know, it's very cut and paste, or very cut and dry for like a JRPG story. However, what I like about this one versus the other ones, for one, the thing that you're going to notice right away is that the battle system is actually done Final Fantasy style, old school Final Fantasy style. Your character standing on one screen side of the screen, the enemies on the other side of the screen. It's not Dragon Quest first person anymore, which is really wild. And of course, that seems to be also taking a page from the, you know, the X-Create mode of JRPGs. And another thing that they brought over from them is kind of the gambling system, or rather, you get an extra kind of currency that's randomly dropped from monsters that you get to exchange for more powerful quartzes, which is really cool. However, it has a whole different weapon system, and I don't think those are drawn for. But I'm going to explain the court system, because that's a new thing. So, before, what would happen is that your characters, you know, would grow in a certain way, and you could equip these certain modifying items that would give them these extra abilities and or passive boosts in battle. Those played a heavy part in kind of like determining what kind of skills your character is going to use, and we'll get to the skill system in a minute. But in this one, they are combining the skills as well as the passive abilities and having them modify each other in a whole new equipment system that involves basically equipping quartzes, which you gather from. You can purchase them, enemies drop them, you also get them as part of the story, those are the things that you're basically gambling for. And so the cool thing about those is that they introduce another element that the X-Create games kind of have, and that is items eating each other for experience points. So you can equip, like, something, let's say there's a level 1 quartz that has 8 levels total. Well, in order to make that quartz gain those levels, and, you know, each level will have a different ability or, you know, passive stat boost that will stack. You know, in order to get that thing to get more levels, it has to consume other quartzes that you aren't using. So let's say you pick up a quartz from a rat that teaches you Ratty Bite or something like that. You know, it's not actually called Ratty Bite, but I did get one from a rat. you know, this is one, it's not a skill that you're really going to use. And plus, you know, a regular enemy drops it, so it's not a valuable thing to you, but it is worth 300 experience points. So then you can have your crystal that you want, or your quartz that you want to level up, consume that other quartz and gain those experience points. And so it's got an item management system that kind of, on top of being able to keep your inventory kind of clean, you have to make some decisions. You're like, well, okay, I really like this thing. I'm going to start leveling this quartz up and, you know, keep this on my character and, you know, see what happens. Actually, the first time I purchased one of the bonus, like, you know, point type things, like a super powerful quartz, quote unquote, it was a level 5 rarity that I got immediately, which is the maximum level of rarity.
Oh, geez.
It's like, it's like, it's not worth, they said something like, it's valuable for little more than lots and lots of experience points. And sure enough, it was worth like 150,000 experience points or something. It's like way more than any of my other jewels. It would be irresponsible for me to consume this quartz with another quartz because it's just way too many experience points. However, it gave me an AoE spell, like the first one I've come across in the game, and it's really cheap to use. And I'm like, oh, hell yeah. So I actually do have this thing equipped and am using it. It's fantastic. So that's kind of how, like, the quartzes work. And that wraps up into the skill system, which this does have the same skill system as the other hit point games. So basically, instead of having, you know, everybody knows fire, everybody knows cure, they take up magic points or something like that. It's actually that there are skills that do things, and whether you can use them or not depends on how many points you've accumulated through, basically it's like waiting points, you know? So if you just do a regular attack, then you charge up those waiting points. They're called action points, I think. And, basically, as soon as you get enough action points to use this skill, then you can use that skill. So that becomes a thing of like, well, I can use this win skill every other turn because I'm always gaining 15 points and this costs 20. So I'm guaranteed to, you know, be able to use it every 2 turns. And then there's like different skills and different stat boosts that allow you to gain action points faster. And, you know, as a result of doing other things, like some skills, when you use them, raise your acquisition of ability points. And so, like, there's all this kind of strategy of timing these moves, but the moves actually don't cost anything to use. They're just, you know, now you can use this because you've got enough action points, you know? And by the same token, there's no healing items. There's no items to use in this game. Your HP completely fills up after every single battle, which is, of course, one of the best modern things that video games do. No more having to use potions outside of battle. But like that means that, you know, if you want to heal your character, that's going to be a move that you have to like have in a quartz that occupies a slot, of which there are limited amounts. Plus, you have to make sure you have the action points to use it when that comes up. So it's lots and lots of strategy involved in this game, but it happens so organically, you don't even realize you're playing like 4D chess with the enemy, like every single battle, of which there are thousands, because this is a bit of an old school game in the sense that when you're walking around dungeons, like, the encounter rates are really high, and the only way to turn them off is to purchase the No Encounters DLC, which, yeah,
that's how they get you.
Yeah, they do get you.
I thought you were going to say buy the item that reduces encounters, but in this case, it's DLC.
You do buy it, but with your actual real money. But they've been doing, I mean, all of the Kemco games have been doing that lately, so, you know, Hit Point is not without sin, but it's also not the only culprit here, but anyway, that's the game mechanically. Like I said, aesthetically, it's just as good as all the others. It does have a slightly different style than the ones that came before it, which, again, I always appreciate that they actually do go for different styles. Great imagination went into this one. The different people of the different places are all really different. In fact, one of your characters that you get is a robot, which is fantastic. One of them is a fish lady with glasses named Bathlet, which I enjoy that. And so, yeah, there's like, really different characters, although I will say it's still male protagonist, female second protagonist. You know how it goes.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Well, $15. What do you think?
It is great. I say go ahead and buy it. I say buy all the Hit Point games from Justice Chronicles onward. In fact, I did buy it on the Switch while we were doing our intro, and I will be continuing my game from there because I don't want to play it on my computer. I'd rather play it in bed.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, next up, Kamigami Clash of the Gods, developed and published by Dream Stories, released July 24th on Steam for $19.99. Easy to play, hard to master. Join this adventure on a unique card game where you're able to do everything you ever wanted. Collect cards, build your decks, play offline on history mode, challenge your friends online, or take on the world in a ranked system. Purnell, what is going on in Kamigami Clash of the Gods?
I can do anything I want.
Anything, man. Just live your life.
Anything. Do it. Well, in the case of this game, what I am thankfully allowed to do is have fun playing a great game because I enjoyed this title. This game, for those who were like me when I looked into it for the first time, if they're wondering, this game has nothing to do with Kamigami Battles, which is a physical card game that I do own. This is a completely different game that just also happens to involve goddesses and cards. And that's the only similarities. So, the idea behind this game is that you are on a board that is composed of, I want to just say, like, five rows, five columns, or so to speak, like 25 squares. I could be a little off on that, but I don't have photographic memory. Sue me. On this board, you and an opponent are vying for control in the form of defeating the opponent's goddess character. That is pretty much like the head of your deck. At the beginning of a round, you will set that character out onto the board. Now, the way this game plays out is you have a variety of cards that can be used to place on the board to fulfill a number of functions. The main characters that you'll be using are like deities and creatures. These characters have a variety of a number of functions. They have a devotion requirement. Everything in this game pretty much runs on devotion. When you play a card, it generates devotion. Every round, you'll generate devotion based off of the cards that are in the field. But you'll also need that devotion to summon them onto the field. You'll then be able to use that same devotion, more of it, to either move them around or use them to attack. And that's what you'll be doing with a lot of deities and creatures, summoning them onto the board, moving them, setting them to attack things when they come into view of them, so long as they have the means to do so with devotion. There are also things like monuments that can be placed, sometimes with absolutely no sub-benefit aside from generating more devotion for you. But other times, you'll get some really cool perks and benefits, like this might allow you to make all of your characters cost less devotion to move, or enemies that attack you will do less damage, or any number of things. It's actually kind of cool how that works. So you'll be placing these different characters on the board, generating devotion, which can then also be used to place more things, all with the hope of them having a synergy to them, because each the god or goddess that you play on the game, they all have a special power just by default, and that special power may very well determine how you decide to play the game, because if this one pretty much gives you more devotion specifically for like moving that specific unit, you might find yourself placing enough characters just to generate devotion to move your main unit directly into range of the opposing god and just beating the snot out of them. Other times, you might find yourself having a character that's like kind of a sponge, not much of a sponge for damage, more of a glass cannon, but they actually just make more the characters more powerful based on how many of them are on the field of that type, like Greek pantheon or, Japanese pantheon, just a number of them. There's four different pantheons, just lay that out there, along with like a weird question mark one that you unlock. So you'll be basically doing a number of different things to combine and use the proper characters to get your game on. And at the end of your turn, the enemy will get to do the same thing, play their characters and set them on the board to go after you. At the end of a round, if you manage to defeat
the opposing unit or characters, you'll get, I guess, that game's version of the in-game currency. This game does not have DLC that I could tell. All of it takes place within the game world itself, where when you win battles, you'll get currency, which you can use to go to the in-game shop to purchase new packs of cards. Early on, you only have access to the Greek Pantheon, but as you progress through the game, you'll gain access to the other Pantheons, which will in turn allow you to buy packs of cards from those and expand upon their decks of cards. You can either take those cards and edit the starting deck you get, which, by the way, I should cover. The starting deck, you get to choose between three different decks, so you're not locked into just whatever they give you. You get a little bit of a choice there. But the cards you buy can be used to either modify that starting deck or just straight up build a new deck from the ground up. And, of course, being me, I generally suck when it comes to that because I want to use every card. That's how I was with Yu-Gi-Oh! That's how I was with the Pokemon trading card game. I was never good at deck optimization. That's also why, like, those roguelike card deck builders have been my cup of tea. Build small, stay small. Just where I like it. But that's mainly the story mode. Like, when you're playing through, that's how you pretty much unlock all the other deities and all the different decks of cards. But also, it's also how you unlock, you know, rematchable characters. So every time you win a battle, you can go battle them in the history mode, or I guess it's like the dual mode, just to see how well you do, and also just to kind of practice against them and grind out some money so you can buy more cards. Because that's going to be a lot of your game, is just getting more cards so you can get a better loadout. Now, if you don't like the idea of going online to play people, the single-player mode, in my opinion, is plenty fun. It's not a riveting storyline or anything. It's literally a guy getting isekai'd into, like, another world and battling with cards there. And every screen is just a new character saying, I'm going to battle because your shirt is red. I don't know. It's never a reason that's really compelling. It's just, I'm going to battle you, and I don't care what the reason is, because ultimately I want to battle them because I like playing this game. I just want to beat more characters with cards. But when you battle them there, you can battle them in the dual mode too, so you can practice and the like. But when you feel confident, you can go online and battle people. I did not, because I'm primarily a single gamer or a single player gamer. But it is there for you if you want to. But let's be realistic here. I mean, the single player part is the part that would be the most suspect and concerning. The multiplayer, if the game is good, should also be good as long as people jump on board and play this game. And I believe they should, because it's a lot of fun.
You know what else is good? Staggerella came in dropping 400 biddies. Staggy, thank you so much. Love seeing you in chat. Good to see you hanging out.
Thanks, Staggy. Much appreciated.
See, I told you it was good.
What was good? The biddies? Oh, good news. Yeah. Sweet, sweet biddies.
Is Kamigami
good? Yeah, I like it very much. Like I said, like I was surprised, or not really surprised. That's more of anything, I was kind of expecting it to not be the game that I thought it was going to be. But I am actually glad for that, because instead I get a completely different game that is also fun to play. The card art is legitimately good too. I'm not sure if it's done by multiple artists or one artist. I think it's multiple. But the card art that I came across in this game is honestly pretty decent. It made me happy to unlock new characters, because then, of course, I can say, hey, I want you in my deck, because it's time to, you know, see you on the board. You know what I'm saying? The card art is good. Ultimately, I think this game is up any card collecting game player's alley, especially if you're a fan of things like Summoner Wars, games where it's not a matter of just playing the card, but also how the card is utilized while it's on a playable space. Which I realize a number of card games these days don't do. So, hey, this is one for that. I think it's a solid play. And I guess the question comes now.
$20. Give me your verdict.
Absolute buy. Worth your time and money. Cool. Give it a go. Just don't expect a compelling story. Just a fun game.
Cool. All right, next up, Solo War Medieval, developed and published by Keslam Oy. Released August 5th on Steam for $12.99, Solo War Medieval is a first-person shooter game like no other. You need to survive against infinite amounts of knights alone, but modern weapons would help you a bit. Modern weapons versus medieval knights, what would be the outcome? Chris, what was the outcome?
Well, I mean, I got murdered a lot. I did some murdering, too.
I was going to say, I hope you did a good amount of murdering yourself, because it looks like that's what this game is all about.
Kind of, yeah. Let's talk about this game. I went into this one with pretty high hopes, because I like the concept. I mean, you know, Army of Darkness, one of my favorite films from back in the day. And, you know, it, the whole, like, boomstick thing, right? You know, yeah. Like, guns versus knights, kind of great. So I was like, okay, this will be, you know, maybe a fun adventure like that or something like that. Or maybe it'll just be, like, really, really violent or something while I'm just mowing down, like, these poor medieval, you know, primitive screwheads with my, you know, with a whatever kind of gun. I don't know the names of guns, so, you know. what it is kind of a, it's a wave shooter. I don't really know what to call these. It's basically, you start the game, they drop some ammo in, and you know, some guns and ammo, you pick it up, and then enemies just start coming in. You can either run out to meet them, or you can stand your ground and wait. The entire game, as far as I know, takes place in this castle. The castle has basically, I would say, you know, maybe two spots that you can really fight in. The big central area, which is where your guns and weapons spawn. And then there's a little bit outside, but not outside the gates. Just the yard, basically. So, I guess I should have known by, like, how this is going to be when I started the game. The way that the assets kind of load in and the way that the guns and items kind of stack is that they kind of, it just explodes into the room, into just a pile, because they're just all kind of crammed together, and then the collision takes over and they just go, you know, and then you just pick it all up off the ground, completely random, no names for any guns, no inventory to show what ammo goes with what guns. They're just different, you know, assets that look like this is a box of red bull, you know, a red box of bullets. This is a yellow box of bullets. You have a certain amount that you can carry, which are mapped to the numerical row of the keyboard. And, you know, what have you picked up? Who knows? There's a button you can press when you have a gun equipped to drop it so that you can pick up something else rather than, like, exchange it or anything. It just tells you your inventory is full. But you don't have time for that because the enemies are already coming in. You got to shoot. Like I said, you got to shoot them in waves. They are coming at you from usually two or three entry points. They tend to spawn where they can come up behind you, no matter what. So I'm not exactly sure what rules the enemies are following. Like, I go up to, like, the front door, right, and I see them coming in the one gate, and then, you know, I shoot, like, three of them, and then I look behind me, and there's, like, two that have spawned and are attacking me now. And then my character slowly, slowly reloads the gun, because I've run out of, you know, my bit of bullets. And then, you know, you get hit, I'm going to say three times if you get hit, you get killed. No iframes or anything. So if enemies, like, you know, gang up on you, you're dead. And then you just restart the entire game. Yeah, it's very, it feels like a demo of a game more than a game. Because, you know, when you shoot the enemies down, you know, you've got your favorite gun and you blast them. Then the next wave comes, and then the next wave comes, the next wave comes. You know, I got a score of over 100, but nothing changed. The enemy types didn't change. The scenery didn't change. No more weapons came in. No more ammo either. That's how many I mowed down with the available stuff I had. And then I just died and started over again. And then there's other little things too. Like, if you use the volume sliders, like, let's say you turn the main volume all the way down because you're trying to do a podcast, it'll turn some things down, not off, at 0%. If you crank all the sound sliders down to zero, then the voice acting is still there. And
weird.
Oh boy, the voice acting. For the most part, it's you know, just a guy in with a microphone just going, you know, you know, that type of stuff. But one of them, I guess he must have got his friend in or something to, like, just completely overact one of them. There is a clip that I'm going to try and get so that I can get it to you for use on this show or something. We need to isolate it somehow because it's like a full 7 to 8 seconds. And remember, this is somebody who has just been shot, like maybe their head's been shot off, of just going like, ah, ah, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, like just completely rivalrying anything that Gilson B. Pontes could have made a ninja say.
Oh, no.
it's fantastic. It's easily my favorite part of the game. I truly enjoy weird stuff like that. I would have liked more weird stuff. I would have liked more of anything in this game, but it really does seem to be that whoever made this game had this idea that they wanted you to use guns to shoot guys with swords and didn't explore much past that, because that is it. That's all there is. I searched thoroughly. I played this for quite a while because it's actually it's not bad to play. Moves fine. Shooting is fine. Reloading is too slow. Oh, and there's no controller support, right? So because why would there be? And if you hit the escape button, it shows you like all the buttons do on the keyboard. That diagram doesn't even tell you that the R button reloads the gun. I just found that. So it was like E to pick up the gun. So it's like right next to R, and then R is just nothing. And I was like, well, okay, but I need to reload this gun because I can't be just shooting guys and then automatically reload because that takes too much time because these guys are faster than me. Anyway, it's not bad to play, but I don't think it's a full game.
Yeah, it seems more like a proof of concept.
Yeah.
Like flesh it out into something more, but as it stands, it's $13. What do you think of it?
I can't really recommend it to anybody. I'm going to give it a try. It if the concept seems cool to you and you just want to like while away some time shooting guys with swords with your guns. There's no story. Like even the loading screens is just stock art of like knights and stuff. There's characters in the loading screen that aren't in the game. It's not Gilson B. Pontes. It functions as a game and it's playable. That's great. That gives it, that makes it much better than I would otherwise say it is, but I can't in good conscience recommend it to people who like video games.
What price would you put on this? Like $5?
I would honestly not put a price on it. I would take it back and work on it some more because it's a great idea and just let people play what's there right now with the promise that more is to come. If it was like $13 for an early access, but we saw like other levels or other things that can happen or other functionality that is to be introduced, then I would say, yeah, it's a good buy-in. But as far as I know, this is the game and it costs $13. And to that, I say, I just bought two really incredible games on the Switch for $13 combined, and I intend to play them a lot. So there
which
you go.
Two?
Horizon Chase Turbo, nice. Which was I've been looking at that one for a long time, but it is on a really good sale today. I also bought Justice Chronicles on top of Gale of Windoria because I have Justice Chronicles on the 3DS, and of course I reviewed it on the computer. But I got to be playing it on Switch. I love the new HD. The HD reskin is great on it, so giving Hitpoint all the monies today.
Nice.
I don't know how you juggle it, buddy. I really, really don't.
How I remember what games I have.
Well, that and also just the storage, because you've had to have been maxing and just archiving stuff long time ago.
I went through it and archived some more to make room for the new Mario Kart 8 tracks, and while I was doing that, I cleared up probably about another 20 gigs of space. So yeah, I've been filling that up.
Oh, jeez.
And I actually was like, go ahead.
I was going to just say, like, because my problem is like, I can never feel, I can't commit to letting games go. Like, it's like, what if I want to go back to it? Then I got to make room for that to come back.
My criteria for it is, do I need to play it soon? Do I need to play it when I'm not going to be near the internet? If the answer to both of those is no, then yeah, it can get archived. It's no problem. If it's Nintendo. if it's a huge big deal to re-download it, like it's 8 gigs of nonsense or something like that, but it's something that I might actually play, then yeah, I'll be like, well, that's going to stay. We'll delete some smaller stuff.
I need to look in the freaking just putting it on like a physical drive. There's got to be a way. I think you can because I remember doing it to copy the files over. So This guy was.
Yeah, I should back them up somewhere, but I'm just like, whatever. I'll wait a few years for that when Switch starts being like, oh, we're gonna shut down things. I'm like, oh, great. Okay.
Yeah, that shit
Thanks,
sucks.
Switch.
It's gonna yes, suck. It yeah, that I have like probably close to 1.5 gig terabytes of stuff on a 1 terabyte card. So.
Yeah, well, all right, moving on. Next game is Moonrise Fall, developed by Made From Strings, published by Checkmate Publishing, released July 29th on the Switch for $9.99. Moonrise Fall is an atmospheric exploration puzzle game about a boy who finds himself lost in a supernatural forest after losing both parents in a car crash. Armed with a clue-filled journal, a camera, and a lantern, he must unravel the mysteries of the forest and photograph the strange creatures that reside there. Brunel, what's going on in Moonrise Fall?
So Moonrise Fall is an interesting game where I have to straight up say, and I'm kind of thankful you mentioned it on here, definitely don't play it while you're tired. Because this game is very much atmospheric, and if you do play while you're tired, you might forget a very important detail, that is to use the bloody journal to experience the game, because that is what's your driving force in this game. You awaken the grove. You have no idea why you're there, or how you got there. The game's beginning kind of gives you the impression that, you know, some unfortunate stuff went down, like again Joe mentioned in the description. But ultimately you're still just kind of figure out, how do I get out of here? So you, with your mask and your backpack, are wandering around this forested area and this interconnected locales. Over time, you eventually gain access to a camera for taking photos and a kalimba for playing musical notes that sometimes has special effects and other times just because you want to hear the music play. Let the music play. So as you're exploring the game, on the surface, nothing seems to make any sense. Why am I doing anything? What are the functions available to me? Why do I have them? But through some light experimentation and through use of your journal, you come to realize that you're trying to locate a series of creatures that are hidden in this location. And the only way to discover them is to pretty much make them come out by solving a variety of puzzles detailed within said journal. Also worth mentioning, because I totally forgot when I mentioned the camera and the kalimba, you also gain the ability to manipulate time. You can fast forward it or rewind it to a number of periods during the day, ranging from the early day to the late evening. This also factors into the puzzle solving. You find yourself going, okay, this description says that this animal is located in this crystal mine. It says something about one day while pushing a mine cart, blah, blah, blah. So you'll go, okay, as I'm exploring, I got to keep an eye out for the scenario this kind of paints for me. And then based on what that says and what I find, I have to engage in a series of steps to hopefully make this creature come out. If you're right about the location and the things you do to draw it out, the creature will appear in the form of like a floating spectral image, which you then need to snap photos of in a quick little mini game where you snap the photos and hit the right buttons when they show up before you run out of time. You pull that off, you capture the creature, and you're able to move on even further. You'll also find yourself kind of snapping photos of like long lingering spirits and like mushroom rocks to get energy points, which can be used to make certain impassable deities get the hell out of your way so you can continue to explore. That's pretty much the gameplay loop. However, it may seem, it's a lot of fun to kind of go through that process. At first, I was ready to, kind of slam this game hard because it just wasn't clicking for me. But once I started getting the vibe of, okay, explore, hopefully spot some zines that make sense and interact with them, it became a completely different beast for me. It's sort of like a somber, quiet, tour of Creepyville. Sleepy Creepyville. There we go. It's even a little better. I think it's a quality game. It's not for someone, it's not for an action junkie, it's not for a person who typically plays games while they're sleepy. If you're the type of person that likes to play a game, kind of kick their feet up and just solve some light, relaxing puzzles, because there's no pressure in this game. There's no penalty for failing or not figuring something out. Well, aside from not progressing, but that's any game, really. As long as you're okay with that, I think you're in for a fun moment here, because I certainly came away having a fun time playing this game. And the only downside is that it is a sad game. Like, there's no happy ending here. This is just, woof, heavy content, but it's good heavy content.
$10, your thoughts?
I think it's a good time. Worth a buy. Purchase it.
Cool. All right, next.
You scared the tar to be there, by the way. He was like quiet, and it's like, what do you think? Like, whoa. Murder.
That's the clock going down.
You guys play games while you're doing the show. I'm like doing like personal, like my credit card info was stolen last week.
Oh no, sorry to hear that.
So now
on the like, positive, it's your credit card info, not unless I hope less it was a hope it was your credit card info, not well,
it was
like
my bank card though.
But, oh, okay.
Yeah, they tried ordering shirts off some website, and I saw the charges, and I contacted them. The fun thing is the company that they tried ordering from, they won't give me their name or address that they tried shipping to. They're like, if you get the authorities to contact us, we'll provide them with the info.
Oh, like, I get that. Then that I understand. As long as you're willing to give it to the authorities, because believe it or not, even though I don't think you're doing this, there is a little bit of vigilante justice going on out there, which admittedly, I wouldn't particularly be against someone saying, I'm mad, I'm going to show you. But sometimes that goes a little too far, and then you have a whole nother problem on your hands. So it's like, let the cops handle it. But hopefully the bank is not being jerkbag dawdlers on it, and they're actually going to take care of their business.
Well, the bank, the bank said that I would have to wait until anything posted before I could dispute it, which I understand. The shirt company, they got rid of everything, so they blocked the accounts that tried making the orders and labeled them as fraud, and they canceled the orders and everything else. But now I'm like trying to buy a song on iTunes, and it's like, your payment is declined. It's like, fuck, I didn't get my new card yet. So
I was about to say, that's the most important part. What happened to your money? Like, are they sending you a new card?
Yeah, I gotta wait till it shows up. So I have so much shit that is like in limbo right now.
Eh, it's not fun. But on the positive, at least it's not the
damn it.
At least it's not the old days where they would steal your car and it was just fucking field day on your bank account. And it was just like, tough luck, jerk.
Yeah. Anyway, next game, Logic Pick, developed by Aliens, published by Naptime Games, released August 5th on the Switch for $7.99. Follow the numbers at top rows and leftmost columns to discover hidden pixel art. Picross, right, Chris?
Yeah, it's Picross.
Yay, how is it?
It's good.
Tell us about it.
Someday we're going to have a review that's going to be entirely that.
next game.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. This is a Picross game. If y'all don't know, Picross is a number where you have a grid of squares. It has numbers on the top, numbers on the side. You're supposed to use those numbers to figure out which blocks to color in on the grid. And once you've colored in enough blocks, you make a little picture. It's a game of logic where, you know, you're not supposed to just, you know, there's no easy answer. It's basically like there's a method, and you kind of learn the method of it. And, you know, it's part brain teaser and part kind of, you know, like looking ahead at like what's coming up and, you know, things like that. It's very clever. It's a very clever kind of game. So this take on it features like some really cute, really colorful graphics. It's very nice and friendly and bubbly, like nice animated background behind like the menus and stuff. Just great polish. It has a fantastic tutorial, so if you do not know how to play Picross, I definitely recommend picking this one up, because it has such a gradual climb in difficulty. Like, you really feel like you can do the thing before it even starts to get challenging. So basically, it's divided into some sections. Of course, there's the tutorial, then there's the collection. The collection is going to be different themes, food, space, sports, you know, dinosaurs and party right next to each other, which I love. You know, they're all themed like that. And then, you know, they have gradually building, you know, difficulty and things like that. And they each have about 20 stages in them. And then there's story mode, which you actually can only unlock. It'll actually show you that you have to be, like, for instance, to unlock Dog, the story of the dog, you have to first clear in the collection mode 10 levels of the, which one is it? It's the one with the TV. Home. So you have to, once you clear 10 levels of home, you unlock the dog story. And each one has a combination of different levels that you have to unlock as a prerequisite to see that story. So, like, there's kind of an incentive to not just sit here and try to play from front to back. Like, you know, actually try some different things and whatnot, which is pretty cool. yeah, lots and lots of content as well. Like I said, there's several of those stories to unlock. The collection has many themes. Just at a quick glance, it looks like maybe 25-ish, and each one has 20 levels in it. So, I mean, that's just a lot. Plus, this one actually does have DLC. It has three different DLC packs that are available to download if you just can't get enough. All three of the DLC packs total, which you can buy as one bundle, like right now, I think for $4.50, so it's not even that expensive, but that gives you like 810 more puzzles, according to the eShop. So, yeah, this is jam-freaking-packed. That's pretty much all there is to say about it. I mean, somebody took Picross and was like, well, we can't change the game itself. Let's just make everything around it delightful.
Cool. Well, what do you think of it?
$8. Yeah. I mean, that's great. I'd say $8. And if you, you know, somehow clear all these levels, then go ahead and check out those DLC packs too. You know, there's other games that do different things with Picross. Like there's the Picross Adventure game. Things like that might be things like that might be a little bit more like overall entertaining, I guess. But I mean, this is solid. And like I said, if you're new to the game in general, this game will teach you real good on how to actually play it. So yeah, comes nice. With my recommendation. I say buy it.
Cool beans. All right, we got one final game to talk about tonight. It's been a long one, but Sophia and the Ancient Clan, developed by H-Room and East Asia Soft, published by East Asia Soft, released August 5th on the Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $7.99. When a talented young witch begins to question the rules and teachings of her magical clan, the entire kingdom suddenly becomes her enemy. As the true and menacing nature of her former master becomes apparent, Sophia must fight to survive as she seeks to unlock the secrets that have been hidden from her. Chris, what is going on in Sophia and the Ancient Clan?
Well, okay, so this one, I apparently got to get me a pair of glasses, because when I looked at this, I was like, oh, okay, this is, yeah, this just looks like a side-scrolling adventure kind of game, whatever.
And then you notice there's an M rating.
Well, then I noticed there's an M rating plus, like, what's the developer's name? It's like Hentai something, right?
Just H-Room is what I have.
Hentai Room is what it actually says when you're loading the game.
Nice.
So yeah, I'm actually trying to pair my Pro Controller to this so I can look at the menu. That's what I'm, okay, great. Yeah, I'm just going to get my Switch here. I always like to have the game in front of me when I talk about it, even if I'm not doing anything. It's like a habit. It's what I use instead of actually making notes. yeah, so this game is an adult side-scrolling action-adventure game. I use that term loosely. It is M-rated. It does advertise nudity and sexual situations. However, I don't think any of that's on the Switch version. We'll get to that in a minute. So we play as Sophia, who, you know, she is a witch. She can run. She can jump. She can double jump. She can shoot a beam of magic bullet that goes about a quarter of the screen. That takes up magic, which magic is basically just a temporary ammunition count. It starts at 100, you know, it costs like 17, kind of a random number. It costs like 17 units to cast like your basic magic missile, and then it very quickly refills. It's not one where you can just like shoot bullets constantly, but usually, you know, if you keep it charged up, then you can take down most enemies pretty decently with it. However, the game does bring in crowds at some point, so you're kind of like, oh, yeah, I need to back up and charge up a little bit before I take this down. So, yeah, you go through the levels. Enemies have no AI. I mean, they walk back and forth and passively wait for you to kill them. If they are wizardy types, then they will shoot a fireball at you with very, like, very rhythmic timing. So you can definitely set your watch by, like, what these enemies are going to do.
Nice.
The levels are long and a little bit, like, I'm not going to say confusing, but kind of bewildering. Like, you know, a level will go from, like, castle to forest and then back to castle. And then the way you finish a level is to just walk all the way to the right, and then, you know, the screen advances, and then you've cleared a level out of the chapter. There's three chapters, and I finished the first chapter, and it was like 13 or 14 levels. So lots and lots of these levels. Some of them are big. And if you die at any point, there's no count to lives, but you do start the entire level over. So kind of unfair when a lot of it is like things like spike traps you didn't see. One of them is there's like a wheel in it that's like a little bit, it doesn't quite look spiky, but it, you know, it does have a texture to it that implies that maybe it's dangerous. And yeah, if you touch it, you die. And then, you know, you discover that far enough in the level to where it's like, okay, well, now I got to start over because I was curious. So after so many levels, and I do mean so many levels, God, so many levels, I would say like the first chapter took me about an hour and a half straight, maybe an hour 45 of gameplay to get to the first boss. And the first boss gave me my first other thing to do besides magic missile, and it's a three-way missile. And I don't mean in the, like, in the M-rated sense. I mean, it's literally a bullet that moves three ways. Anyway, so, yeah, it's a dull platformer, I gotta tell you. You know, 13 levels in chapter one of the same two backgrounds just alternating with each other. And interspersed throughout these stages are the naughty books, and the naughty books will add a naughty image to your gallery. So here's where we got to talk about the difference between this game on Switch and this game on Steam. On Steam, this game is called Sexcraft, Sophia and the Lewd Clan, and it is hentai. It's the same exact game, too many bland, you know, platforming levels. However, it is interspersed with lots and lots of hentai scenes, both cutscene and within the game. Apparently, you do more with these soldiers than just shoot magic missiles at them. So that game is the same thing, but is uncensored, and it keeps in the, we're throwing in a bunch of sex stuff to keep things interesting in an otherwise aggressively uninteresting game. Those scenes, even the naughty book scenes, are thoroughly censored in this game. There's one scene that's actually in the Steam previews. That's the only reason I know that it's there. And it's just a full on, like, it's so goofball looking, but it is like very adult. And it is so, it's zoomed in on just like the Switch version is just that picture, but it's only the character's face blown up to where it fills up the whole screen, and like one arm that you can see. So like a face and one arm of that scene is the collectible that is in the, and it's still the same like dialogue. So you have no idea what's going on. Like, why is this person saying HNNNNNNNNNG all the time? And then like, you look at this, you know, I looked at the Steam preview and I was like, oh, okay, that's what that scene actually is. Gotcha. So yeah, this is an After Dark kind of game that removed all of that element of it and left in the stuff that you're supposed to get through in order to get those scenes. So I've unlocked about almost half of the naughty books right now, and I still haven't seen so much as a like scantily clad bosom, much less anything nude. So yeah, I'm starting to feel like if I put in like three or four more hours into clearing all these other stages, I'm just gonna end up, you know, with nothing to show.
I know,
for it.
You might beat the game and get a titty.
Maybe. I mean, that's
one single titty, and it's a guy's titty.
Maybe. I mean, yeah, or I could look at the Steam preview images.
Purnell's titty.
In my side boob.
Well, all right, I will beat the game for that then. If I show you an ending screen, I better get a booby.
I wish I could call the episode Purnell's titty. That
take
would be
down
amazing.
To Purnell's titty. What?
All right, $8 on Sophia. What do you think?
No, clear away from this one. I mean, there's no nudity in it, and the gameplay without that is just it falls so flat that it's laughable. Even the boss fight, which seemed like it was going to be pretty cool, like it was just so by the numbers. Like the game was clearly, like, this game was designed to just connect dots of, like, you know, sprites and cutscene, like, hentai. And none of that is present in this game, so the Steam version is cheaper. You can, like, right now, the Steam version is $5.59, and the, like, Sexcraft Adult Art Pack, whatever that is $2.24 to add on to it. So, like, all the DLC for this is still cheaper than this Switch thing. So, yeah, like, just put this on your Steam Deck or something if you really want to play this game. At least you'll get the whole experience.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go.
Well.
Can't recommend this one. I'm sorry.
There's better titty games from East Asia Soft out there.
And even on the Switch.
Yeah.
There are. So, there you go.
Oh, well. Well, that's it for this episode. Made it through. This was a long one. But, you know, what are you going to do?
Long.
Enjoy.
Yeah. Music this episode. Because fuck Chris, I'm going to play something from Mystic Quest.
I love Mystic Quest. What are you talking about? Mystic Quest. I said nobody else cares about it.
I like the music.
I myself have covered music from Mystic Quest.
I love Mystic Quest. It just feels like you're ignoring the grand majesty and majesticness and magic of Mystic Quest.
Did I not point out in both my Dragon Stinker and Dragon Lapis reviews that they got Ryuji Sasai, and that was reason enough to purchase those games, even though they're Kemco X-Create? No, wait. Were they X-Create?
You could have. There's no way I would remember.
Yeah, that's okay. I might be bluffing. But let's just... Yeah, no, I love Mystic Quest, and I love Ryuji Sasai, and everybody go play Treasure of the Rudras, because it's also good.